There was just a sense instilled in all of us where we just thought, why can't we do that?
It wasn't as much, oh, Dad did it so I can. It was more like, Dad did it so I've got to beat him.
All of our friendships have just been totally torn apart.
The world record's 40 days and 17 hours, and we're going to smash it by a day, hopefully.
But we've got this dream, and as long as we've got our mind behind us, then we're fine.
Where did you get the name, Three Flying Fish?
It actually wasn't any of us who came up with the idea. So we all met in the Air Cadets, and we were all in the same squadron, so we've been mates for years through the Air Cadets. And we were originally called Young Waves.
Yeah, something like that.
Young Waves, which is a pretty dreadful name. But Anna's sister, Coral, she came up with Three Flying Fish because we, you know, we all had a passion for flying through the Air Cadets and everything, and we wanted to kind of link that to our row. Three Flying Fish came out of the woodworks.
Is there any other Three Flying Fish out there? Because one thing I always look for when names, no matter how impactful or your notoriety is going to be, you don't want everyone to have your handles, your web domains. And is there somebody else out there that's got a million views called the Three Flying Fish? Or
no, there's not. I think we've got a pretty unique brand now.
Yeah.
We've made sure no one can, you know, get in there. But yeah, we're pretty unique now.
So you set out on wanting to do a challenge, or was the rowing challenge the one you wanted to do?
Yeah, no, we started. So my dad did the row in 2021 with an American lady, like out of the blue as well. Our family was always like, we did triathlons a lot. So we were a sporty family, but never a rowing family necessarily. And he did the row, and then after cadets one night, Rowan dropped me back. Boat was outside waiting to be sold on, and Rowan was like asking all these questions and whatnot. And I think at one point he was like, I reckon we could do that. And I was like, yeah, I reckon we could. And that's literally how it started. And then from there, I think 2 weeks later, we were sat in my living room and like watching all these videos and all that stuff and just like really getting to know it.
Had you told your parents at this stage?
No, absolutely not. when they first found out, they were just, I think they were incredibly supportive. They'll always be supportive in anything, you know, we want to do. But it was probably another one of those, you know, oh, Rowan said he's going to go do one of those crazy things that will never happen. But, you know, 3.5 years later, we're 4 months out from leaving the Canary Islands to go across the Atlantic. And it's so pretty scary.
Anyone watching this will assume that you are blessed with some sort of gift that you'll just do. You'll set out a goal to achieve and always achieve it. But you hinted there before that this is another one of these things that you want to do but didn't. Are you extremely gifted, or was this like a unique experience you thought, I'm going to do this?
I think there is a sense in all of us where we're incredibly dedicated individuals.
Always throughout your whole life?
I think there's evidence there since, you know, we've all been quite young. We've known each other for upwards of 8 years. I think, especially in the Air Cadets, we were very driven people in the Air Cadets. Mm. And we rose through the ranks, and we've, you know, put so much effort to get to the point that we did in the Air Cadets. But with this row, brought us to another level where we had this crazy dream. It was just after COVID, so we'd been stuck inside for 2 years practically during the lockdowns. And I think there was just a sense instilled in all of us where we just thought, why can't we do that? If we put the effort and the dream, why can't we go and do something so big? And we stuck with it. And I don't think there's any sense of no one else in the world has what we have. I think what we just want to show is, if you've got the dream and if you want to do it, it might be, you know, unloading the dishwasher for your parents, or
not my dream.
Neither mine, that's hard for me. Or, you know, putting your hand up in class. Mm. It might be that level. But if you stick with it and you've got that dream, then you can do anything. It's just sticking with it.
So because your dad rode it, was that the seed to think this is possible? Because Bernie, who is part of your journey and a great friend of mine, when he explained to me about the row, it seems like absolutely crazy to even think that it's physically possible. But because you have you're connected to somebody, or you're all connected to somebody that know, did that make the dream seem more possible?
I think in some aspects, yeah. A big part was like I said about us being a sporty family anyway, we were very competitive. So it wasn't as much, oh, dad did it so I can. It was more like, dad did it so I've got to beat him, basically.
Even better.
So I've got, if I don't beat his time, it's going to be embarrassing. But I think like Rowan mentioned about how his family were like, well, they're not going to do it. It's definitely the same. I think because we're all kids,
yeah.
It's just a kid's thing that you come up with an idea. You say you and your best friend are going to go move to Australia or something. Mm. You're never going to do it. It's just an idea that you come up with. And I think I was quite lucky that we'd already experienced it with dad. So obviously, whereas your guys' parents were probably a bit like, oh my God, don't want you to leave, it's dangerous, whatever, whatever. My dad was like, yeah, go on, get on the boat, do it.
Wow. We'll see yeah, because he's experienced
they're
it.
They're so up for it because, yeah, we've already gone through it and we're not as, you know, we know what it's like. Whereas for you guys, it's obviously the first time experiencing anything like
so
that.
So did you all decide to break the news to your parents on the same day?
Well, Anna and Rowan broke theirs obviously before because I joined the team at a later date, which we'll obviously talk about later on. But I think what you said about it being something crazy to do, it is obviously a crazy thing, but for us it's almost normality now. Everyone we socialize with and all the networks that we're in is to do with what we're doing, and you know this best of anyone in the business world as much as in the rowing world. Everyone you speak to is in a similar boat, pardon the pun, similar boat to you. And it's kind of like everyone on the outside is everyone on the outside is looking and thinking, wow, this is crazy, like they're going to do that, and we're like, yeah, we've just spoke to 20 different people today who are doing the exact same thing. So it's normal, you know. But obviously sometimes when you take a step back and you're with family or friends who aren't involved in that, you actually think, wow, what we're doing is mental, really.
But we talk about, you know, the way we're talking is like the whole 3.5 years, it's been consistent amount of motivation and, you know, outlook on that dream. It's far from the truth, you know. The ups and downs that we've gone through and the setbacks that we've, you know, had to overcome over the past 3.5 years have just been so hard. They have been the times where, you know, Anna and I's relationship have just been torn apart. Our friendship, all of our friendships have just been totally torn apart. And getting through those, I think, is what has made us such good team members as it is now, with conflict management, you know, resolving things and looking at a common goal. That, you know, it's the ups and downs that makes it work.
So even internally, with all the other challenges of your training, are you saying even between yourselves, you've had difficult
hugely,
days?
Hugely. Like
massively.
When our old teammate left the team, Anna's and I's friendship just fell apart. And in turn, pretty much the team fell apart.
And what was that, because you felt that you just couldn't do it anymore?
Absolutely. We hadn't got a single sponsor 2 years in. We had no financial backing, and it genuinely just, we were at the time 2 years away from, 5 months away.
And angelically, I flew down from the sky and brought all the sponsorship the angel along. Yeah.
I think the big thing in our campaign as well is that we are young people. You know, we're human, we're not some... You look at these multimillionaires and you think, you know, you can't touch them. You know, you're never going to meet them. They're completely on a different world to you, a different planet. Whereas we are just normal kids. Do you know what I mean? Yes, we've done this incredible thing now, but it doesn't mean that we're perfect in every way. You know, we're still mates. We still fall out over stupid things, you know, like you do with your parents when you have a go at them because you didn't unload the dishwasher. You know, there's all arguments and little things, and I think the big thing for our team is that we're going to be on this massive, like this tiny little compact boat for 40 to 60 days. Every single thing that could go wrong, we need to prepare for. So if someone annoys us, it can't be a keep it in. It's got to be a we speak about it, we resolve it. And I think we're kids, we have arguments all the time, but like Rowan said, having that common goal and just learning how to resolve it or even just put it aside and be
Have you been on the boat and had a fight while you're rowing? And
absolutely.
You don't want to speak to each
other. Absolutely, we have. Times. Yeah, there have been times.
But you still have the common goal that you need to train.
It's not a big fight. It's just a little like someone says something, someone don't agree with it, and then we just shut up for 20 minutes. And then a good song comes on.
Yeah.
And then we'll just start
singing.
And then
we'll be friends again.
And then we're all right.
We might not like each other at some point in time, but we've got that common goal. And I think it's really hard for our mindsets to waver from that. Just keeping the row in our mind, and especially on the row, keeping Antigua where we finish on our mind, that will get you through anything, I think.
So what would have been the biggest challenge you faced this past 2.5, 3 years?
I think we all have different challenges. I think Anna and Rowan's biggest challenge has probably been Matthew leaving the team.
Yeah, so
and then to reform the team.
Absolutely. When our old teammate left, that really did tear apart the team. That was looking like we weren't going to do it anymore. As I said, we had no financial backing. We had pretty much nothing in the bank. And we genuinely did have to ask the question, are we going to do this anymore? Yeah. Is there any point in doing this? But again, we had our dream. Our dream is to row the Atlantic and inspire young people. And who says that we shouldn't do that? And we fought for it and we looked for a new teammate. Harry came aboard and, you know, the rest is history. A few months after that, we got our first big sponsor on board.
Mm.
And then everything snowballed. And pretty much a year and a bit later, we're sitting with you now, 5 months away from leaving La Gomera in the Canary Islands to go. And it's just a different world.
I think your story is so common because everyone I know that's done something successful has always had a breaking point of either it's really over, unless a miracle happens, or it's going so well, only a miracle or only something terrible can spoil it.
Yeah.
But it nearly is always that zigzag of, if something's going so well, you have to be nearly have to question it than if something's going so bad.
Sometimes you need to hit rock bottom to open the doors
nearly all the time.
Yeah.
There's different people watching this podcast today, but there's the people that have already hit rock bottom in life that can look at this and go, well, it can't get any worse. And listening to you guys could possibly help them, you know, start and move forward in their life and achieve whatever their dream is or however they want to leave their story for others to follow. Or there could be people out there that are thinking, actually, I need to be careful because things are going so well at the moment.
Yeah.
And I've had them parts of my life where things are going so well. To be fair, even now, I reframe my day and realize that when things are going so well, really behind the scenes, there's loads of other shit going on.
Yeah.
But I've got used to that. That's part of the going well. Now, you should probably say things are going well when you've done a 5 or 6 hour practice row, you're exhausted, you're knackered. Yeah. Really, you've suffered.
Yeah, exactly.
But you've reframed it to make it sound bliss. Oh, what a great day. The waves weren't that choppy. Oh, what a great day. We got 6 hours rowing. Other people would think it's a bloody nightmare, wouldn't they?
Definitely. I think the success of what we've done has been so successful because of the hardship we've gone through to get there. We've gone from zero pounds in the bank to, you know, upwards of £140,000 in the bank now to fund our dream. And we've had to work for every single bit of that. And I think all the hardship that we've gone through and the challenges we've overcome have just made us so much better teammates.
Yeah.
You know, we know what makes each other annoyed now. You know, we know that now before we go on the row, so we don't have to worry about finding that out on the row. So we know what makes each other tick. So, you know, we don't need to.
Do you know what seems quite rare as well? For me, listening to you, you mentioned success a lot already.
Yeah.
Which is a fantastic mindset to have. So you haven't come in here, or even in your own mind, thinking modestly, you know, it's only the beginning. You actually realise you've succeeded.
If this all ended now, we'd be happy. We've already succeeded. And
well,
we'll
be that happy.
Well, after we row, but yeah. I'm saying we've already achieved. And
so you're offloading even some of the pressure,
of course,
by saying, well done. That's an incredibly unique stance to have.
Yeah.
Because if I've bring it back to when I was younger and the successes that I had in my life, I nearly beat myself up because the success should be better or should be quicker. And I didn't give myself that little bit of a, to be fair, I'm still struggling with it now, to give myself that little bit of credit. But if yous are able to make note of all the wins that you've had along the way and be proud, yet so modest about it, like, you know, you're in a very unique group of people.
You need to remember when you are in a success or when you are in a high and things are going well, sometimes you get horse blinkers and you think, oh, this is normality now. Everything's going so well. Like, we're up here today. We've got RAF Valley in a few weeks. It's all going so smoothly. Mm. But at any point, that could just all disappear and that could go back to how it was before, where we had nothing. And I think it's a really important lesson that everyone should remember in life, that what you've got now has always been better than what you've had previously at some point in your life. So you always need to be thankful and sort of grateful and proud of yourself that you've got to the point where you are now, regardless of whether that's a low moment, like having no money, because we still had each other, we still had the team, we still had the dream, we still had the friendship there. So we were still in a success, in a sense, but it was a lot smaller than the success now, obviously. But who's to say that tomorrow it could all go tits up and fall apart?
I've got a saying on my desk, a little picture frame, and it says, everything is temporary.
Exactly, yeah.
And
I've got a tattoo.
Yeah.
It says, just keep going, no feeling is final.
Exactly, like, yeah. So the fact that you're way ahead of, you know, it's actually beautiful to even have a conversation with people that are still in their early years and to have such a vision. So back to so you decide you're going to do the role. Had you any idea about all of the training? Like, how about even, my idea is you get in, you learn how to row for hours and hours and hours and hours and you're ready. But there's a lot more to it than just rowing, isn't there?
So I would say we were very naive when we started. We didn't realise how much everything would cost, the amount of training that would go into it, everything. We didn't realise that. We didn't know we had to climb a £150,000 mountain to even just get to the start line. We didn't realise the amount of training hours we need to put in. The legalities we need to go through, the logistics that we need to juggle. We didn't know any of that, but we found that out quite soon. And then when that we came to terms with that, that's when, you know, our minds went very focused. We said, like, how are we going to do this? And then we kind of started treating our campaign as a business. We thought, you know, the only way that this is going to succeed is we need to think of this as a business. You know, we're going to ask people for money, but how are we going to give back to them? Mm-hmm. You know, it's always a two-way street. You know, people give us money, we're going to help them out as well. So we needed to make our message clear. So we came up with three aims. We needed to do a marketing strategy, get our social media out there, make our brand. It's all about the brand, and we're the brand of the Three Flying Fish. And then everything came from there, really.
How do you decide who sits where in the boat?
I choose.
No, but is there a strategy behind that? Or do you have a favourite place to sit?
I like the middle. Harry likes the middle because he gets the sun on him.
Yeah, I like to get the tan on my back. I like the sun. Oh,
evening sun.
Well, sun's normally either way. I like to just have that middle seat because you're not blocking by the cabins. The two cabins are overhang a little bit. And if you're by the back cabin, or the front cabin, sorry, you'll get a bit of sunblock.
So you want sun every day for UV, yeah. For 30, 40 days?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna be very tan.
It does change, to be fair.
We are from Essex, though, so it's
normally kind of... you rotate, so whoever's... You normally switch.
Actually, it's warmer down south, isn't it?
You normally switch who's in which position, depending on...
Okay, but is there a stronger position or a...
No.
Every position is equal.
It's hot. You have no privacy on that boat. You have no personal space. It's just hot seats the whole time. You don't have your own cabin. You share cabins. All the rowing seats are, you know, whatever one's available, really. It's the case of... The only three things you need to do is sleep, eat, and row, and poo, actually, so four things. And it's a case of just getting rowing as quickly as possible and getting to sleep as quickly as possible.
Would you alternate? Will there be, like, for example, two of you at all time?
There'll be stages where there'll be one person rowing, and we're looking at that now, actually. So shift patterns are quite difficult, especially in a three-man team, because it's not obviously an equal number. So teams of four, they'll normally do 2 hours on, 2 hours off, and that they'll do that the whole way along. It's quite sustainable. It's all right to do. But for us, it's do we do 3 hours on, 3 hours off, because you get an extra hour of sleep, but then you've got 3 hours on the oars, which could be quite difficult. We're also looking at doing, for the first 2 weeks, we're going to do potentially 2 hours on, 1 hour off, which obviously means out of the day, you only then get, instead of 12 hours rest and off the oars, you only get six.
Eight.
Well, yeah, 8 hours, which isn't too long. Yeah, my muscles are a bit bad, wasn't it? 8 hours, it's not that long, considering you've got sleep in that, eat, clean yourself, go to the toilet.
So, but would it be... But we're all extremely aware of how valuable sleep is for recovery. What would happen if you thought, I'm absolutely knackered, I've just slept 2 hours, I really need to get another few hours? Would it make sense, or do you just force it and you have to go back on?
You'd be very surprised how quickly your body adapts to shift patterns. Your body's an incredible thing. I rode the North Sea last year from Scotland to Norway. With practically no training at all for the sleep pattern. I did a 3 hour on, 3 hour off
shift. How long pattern. Did that take you?
I think about a week it took me. And
think I'd know exactly down to the second how long I was on that boat for.
I was loving it. The days just blended into one. It was just, you're just rowing. Your body just goes into it straight away. It's pretty easy. I think the 2 hour on, 1 hour off one will be hard. That's not much sleep at all. You're not going to be getting any more than an hour sleep at a time. That's going to be hard. But we need to row hard to get away from the islands.
Yeah.
So we need that.
Is that because of currents?
The currents, weather conditions. You know, when you in the Canary Islands, there's a bit of a microclimate around there, and you need a burny nose. You just need to row as hard as you can to get out of those conditions and into the trade winds of the
Okay, so if there's currents, you have to fight the current as much as you can. And when do you relax then? You don't?
You don't.
You don't.
That boat needs to be going forward as much as you can. Yeah, there might be times when you cannot row against the weather conditions or the currents. So you put something called a power anchor out, which holds you more or less in the same place.
It's like a parachute.
It's like a parachute, but goes in the water. Obviously, you can't anchor up in the middle of the Atlantic because it's about 5 miles deep, so we don't see
it. But you're not meant to, are you? That's the idea.
Yeah, you're meant to keep going. The autopilot that sits on top of the rudder has to have sort of a constant flow of water through the rudder to work, otherwise it will just burn out. And it will
so navigation is automatic.
Yeah, so, well, we every day we'll have phone calls with our weather router, who will give us essentially like a new bearing to keep us in a sort
on
of
a path.
Because you're not just doing a straight line across. If you look at on a map, the route that people take, it's kind of like a smiley face, like a dip. And people throughout that, if you zoom in, they're navigating through different weather systems and storms and trying to benefit the best winds and the best swells you can get. So you're constantly changing your bearing, sometimes up to two or three times a day. But it's really important that you do that, because obviously if there's a nice weather system coming in, that's going to push you further along. You might get a bit of time off the oars. If there's some nice waves that you can sort of surf along, you might not have to put the oars in, and you'll get a decent amount of speed just get pushed along for free. So it's really important you weather route correctly. And obviously by doing that, you need to change the heading. So you basically put a bearing onto a compass, which is all electronically done on the boat for our solar panels. And then that will tell the autopilot or the auto helm to keep us on that bearing. So it's got a compass built into it. And if the boat diverts off that bearing, it will change the rudder, and then it'll get us back onto that bearing. So it'll keep us going the direction.
Wow, that all sounds so easy now.
So
it's easy. It's easy, but you've got to row. You have to row for it to work.
So all we have to do, we're just the engines. We just, you know,
just pretty much.
When you put just in front of the sentence, it's easy then, isn't it?
Exactly. But I think if you go into it, you know, thinking it's going to be the hardest thing you ever do, which it is going to be the hardest thing we've ever done. But if you're stuck in that mindset, you could be setting yourself up to fail. I think if you've got a little bit of humour around it, I'm going to say, you know, at times it could be, it can be easy and it's going to be fun. Mm. That's when you succeed. You know, you respect it, but you also have a bit of, you know, humour around it. I think.
How long do you think it's going to take you?
39 days.
That's the record.
The world record's 40 days and 17 hours, and we're going to smash it by a day, hopefully. We're gonna aim. If we get a forecasted finish.
The world record for world record, all age groups?
For an extended trio.
Okay.
Yeah. So if after the first 2 weeks, which is essentially the hardest bit, because you need to get, as Rowan said earlier, out of the islands and then onto the mid-Atlantic bit. If we get out there and then we're forecasted to do it in a world record breaking time, then we're going to go for it. We're going to smash it, hopefully. And if we don't, then obviously we're not going to push crazily like we would, but I think we'll go for the world record, definitely.
A lot of it's luck, though.
Yeah.
It kind of really all depends on weather conditions. If you've got a little bit of bad weather, you probably won't get the world record. But if you've got really favourable weather that's, you know, behind you and pushing you the whole way, you have a good chance. So a lot of it's, you know, luck of the draw, what year
so,
you go.
So you've got, you're on the 38th day and you've got... How many miles an hour can you row?
You average about 70 a day.
70 a day. So you're 80 miles from shore.
Oh, we're pushing.
And you've got one day to do it.
I'll be snapping. I'll be pushing so hard, I'll be snapping oars.
You guys can row for the next day. Other than that, I'm not worried about the record.
I think realistically, if we're in that position, I think it's a case of...
You'll be through on the oars.
Three of us are going to be on the oars. We're going to push as hard as we can. Yeah. But if we don't get it, at least we gave it a go.
Definitely. I might butcher his name, but I think it's Ben O'Brady, the adventurer, when he walked across the South Pole. Do you know the guy? Ben. Google him there. Ben O'Brady.
Colin O'Brady.
If you listen to him, he's an adventurer.
He knows.
That's because he's fast on his fast on the fingers. Colin O'Brady, he's an adventurer. He's done lots of extreme adventures. But he was the first man to circumnavigate the South Pole. And he was, I think, 36... the final 36 hours of the South Pole walk, he basically just didn't stop. He just walked. And they were tracking him. And so the first day when he started, I always remember thinking, that is unbelievable. He had 250 kilos of food on his sled. Bernie know this because you did the North Pole. Wow. But 250 kilos. So the first day when they dropped him at the starting point, he couldn't move the sled.
Yeah, can imagine.
So he rings his wife and goes, I can't move. So she said, look, just try and move a little bit. And the first day he got somewhere. Look, I'm obviously butchering the proper story, but anyway, you can all search and get that. But he basically moved like a mile or two the first day.
Yeah. Yeah.
He moved very little distance and eventually got into his stride. And as he got on, and then he just knew he was close to home. But they were following him on his sat phone.
Mm.
And as the sled got lighter, he got faster.
Yeah.
And he basically went into that flow state.
This is what we've been talking about this a lot, haven't we, over the last day or two of being here with you, about consistency and how having a shared goal is the one thing that creates success. And you spoke about the mosque, is it, with the step?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a blue mosque in Istanbul, and it's a huge marble step. That's the entrance. And it must be billions of feet have hit that over whatever length of time, and it's wore down the marble step to the, and I just looked at it and go, not one foot would ever pass that marble step would make an impact,
make a change. Yeah,
but the repetition and the amount of steps that literally has wore it down.
Exactly. And that's a demonstration of this campaign, I think. Every day chipping out little tasks here and there, and having that call every week with Bernie or someone else just chipping away at it, and now that's what's created and generated the success that we're at now.
I think that's something we're going to use on the row as well, is actually having small goals. I don't think we're going to be thinking about Antigua for most of the row. We're not going to be, you know, rowing to Antigua. We're going to be having small goals. So maybe, let's say one day we're thinking, oh, we've rowed 50 miles today. Let's aim to row 55 miles tomorrow, and having those small goals to keep you going. Because if we're you know, just started the row and we're only thinking about Antigua, that's 3,000 miles away. That's a stupid goal to think about at that time. Maybe our goal is to row a quarter of the distance at that time. It's having those small goals that, you know, is you work for the bigger goal, that I think that's what is going to get us through. And as we were explaining, that is everyday life as well. It isn't just in the row, it's having those small goals, those short-term, medium-term and long-term goals set out clearly. It gets you through. It's an incredible technique.
Well, speaking about Bernie, I'm sure that you've had a lot of detailed conversations and guidance on how to pace yourself with food. Tell me how Bernie came into the picture and how impactful he's been.
So Bernie rode the Atlantic in 2022 to 2023.
Yeah.
And that's how we became aware of him. And I'm lucky enough to work full-time in ocean rowing. So I work for a company called Rannoch Adventure that builds majority of the world's ocean rowing boats and deals with majority of the world's ocean rows themselves, logistically, training-wise and everything. And Bernie used one of Rannoch's boats and trained with Rannoch. And then we were following his campaign and we were really struggling to deal with everything. We hadn't gained any money or anything. And then I just thought, why can't I ask him to give us some advice? He had a huge campaign with the Boat of Hope campaign. And I just thought, I'm going to introduce myself to this guy, see if he can help us. So I did at Rannoch. I went over to Bernie. Bernie will remember it very well. And I just said, fancy jumping on a call? You know, we're struggling a little bit. You know, we need some advice. Your campaign was huge and amazing. Could you just give us some advice? So that's how it started, but we jumped on quite a few calls and Bernie gave us some invaluable advice. And I think everything just grew from there. I think we just came closer and closer and closer. And then Bernie came on board full time onto the team as our partnership director. And ever since then, I think just everything's just shot up. If there's any pivotal moment, I'd say, in our campaign, it's when Bernie came on board full time. My life has changed, all of our lives have changed. And yeah, it's a lot of it is down to Bernie and his generosity of his time and his network as well.
I think you'll find a lot of people will say that about Bernie. So well done for having Bernie in our lives.
Absolutely.
I've got endless appreciation for Bernie as well. What about specific causes or charities? Who are you doing it for?
So when we started the campaign, we realised that we can't do something like this without raising money for a charity. And pretty much instantly, we decided on Teenage Cancer Trust.
Okay.
So I had a friend who died when she was 16 of cancer, and I didn't realise how much it would affect everyone around her. So my whole school year, her family, it was just, there was a massive effect on all of us. And then a couple of years after that, we started the row and the campaign, and we instantly decided on Teenage Cancer Trust because our whole angle for this campaign is about young people. It's about inspiring young people to push boundaries, to do anything, and to raise money for a charity like Teenage Cancer Trust, young people that can't actually do a row. It means a lot to us, and we've worked very closely with Teenage Cancer Trust for 3.5 years, and we're incredibly proud to be raising money for such a important cause.
You must be fully aware that this is like whatever happens on the row, this is like the stepping stone to so many other things, really.
Definitely.
You know, you don't row and go, wow, we've done it. You actually row and think, holy fuck, we've set ourselves up here, haven't we, for next year. Like next year is going to be just massive in a different way.
Absolutely. There is, of course, we're doing the row for, you know, inspiring young people and raising money for Teenage Cancer Trust and our other goal to be the youngest team in history to do the row. So we are doing that. But there is also a selfish element in it as well. At the end of the day, we want to be ocean rowers. We want to break these records. And we also do know that we're lucky enough to have done this, and it is going to open a load of doors. But we've realised that we've created so much momentum here through our campaign, and after the row, we hope it's going to be still there, this momentum, and we're just going to want to keep going with this. If we can do it full time and inspire young people full time with what we're doing, I think that's the dream, isn't it, for us? If we can, you know, just focus our lives on inspiring young people, not just young people, old people as well, or, you know, middle-aged people, any people. If we can inspire young people, anyone, to push their boundaries, and, you know, if it's just one person, then it's a success.
So individually, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the good thing is, like, the campaign doesn't finish when we finish the row. So, like, now we go around to schools and places and, you know, companies, and we do talks. Oh, we're going to do this row. Whereas we haven't actually done it yet. You know, anyone can go out and say they're going to row an ocean, they're going to do whatever. But once we've actually done it, then that's where the campaign really, really ramps up, because that's where we can go around and say, yes, this is what we've done. Here's all the cool footage we've taken. You guys can do this, or you can, you know, step out of your comfort zone and try something new. So our whole campaign, like Rowan said, aim one, is to inspire young people to kind of push boundaries and show that things are possible. So once we've done it, that's where we can go around and actually say, yeah, we've done this, you know, it's not impossible. Don't think that way. Try. It took us 4 years, took us 100 setbacks, but we still got there in the end.
I think the thing we need to stress is that there's nothing totally inherently special about us. We're three normal kids from a normal town. We haven't done anything huge before. This is our first.
Do you know what's also really good? You haven't walked in here henched. Looking, you know, with biceps and lats.
What are you trying to say?
I think I've got quite big muscles. What are you talking about?
That's,
you're absolutely right.
Harry's going to cry later. He's going to go, you didn't think I was in.
Yeah, but you know, I think there's some endless books you'll read about Navy SEALs and the most successful people. And whether it's, like, for example, Jocko Wills has a book. He's quite a famous Navy SEAL. And he always says the most successful people are the ones that come in extremely normal, extremely just quiet. And you'll see the tattooed, henched people walking in, going to take over the world. Yeah. And they're the ones that always bow out.
Yeah. At the end of the day, when people think...
Sorry, you've got a little bicep going on.
Stop it. When people think of ocean rowers, they think of 6'5", hench people, and it's not really the case. Ocean rowing is about the mind. It's not about how strong you are. It's about the mind. If your mind's strong enough and you've got your dream...
That's an analogy for life.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about the mind, and that's what we've realised. We're lucky to work enough with a guy called Matt Seeley, who's done an ocean row. He actually broke the record for fastest trio to go across the Pacific. Very similar to us. Obviously, we're just doing the Atlantic. And he makes us realise that, you know, our mind is the most important thing. Our shared goal, you know, and everything is just... We're not the strongest people in the world, you know. We're not the most endurance people in the world, but we got this dream, and as long as we got our mind behind us, then we're fine.
So what do you think this challenge will teach you about yourselves, each individually? So
I think for me, it'll teach me to have more faith in myself and to sort of give myself the credit when I do something well. As you said earlier, you always used to beat yourself up. And as a team, I've had to kind of put that attribute in my own self aside. So I'm going to hopefully become a pilot in the RAF. And I did my examinations for that. Did that last year, and I got 2 points below what I needed for the fast jet pilot. I was absolutely gutted. That was like my dream for my whole life. I've always wanted to do it. Saying that, I got offered every other job role as an officer in the RAF, so I could literally go in now and do anything I wanted except the one thing I want. And obviously that's a good achievement to have had offered everything else, but I wasn't happy. That's the one thing I wanted. So what have I done? I'm going to go again and again and again until I get that. So I've just had to change things around. So instead doing university, then go back at it again after. But the opportunity's there still, but I beat myself up about things. So I think doing this has taught me to work as a team and in myself to sort of give myself credit when I've done something well.
Anna?
I think probably like they were doing such a big challenge, and I think I get really like focused on the tiny little things that are really actually insignificant. Like if Rowan says something to me and I take it the wrong way, that could like ruin my week. Or like if my mum has a go at me. But like just in general, like anyone, like I take things very much to heart and I cry a lot, like they know.
She's not getting,
don't know what she's talking about.
Yeah, like I think, like Harry said, really, giving myself some credit, like if I can do that, then stop worrying so much about the little things, stop thinking I can't do stuff because I'm too worried about what's gonna happen.
I think that's natural though. It's just as you get older, you're able to reframe slightly better and condition yourself to realize that most of the stuff that upset you throughout your whole life isn't really that important.
Yeah.
And the things that are important are you having your goals and gaining experience. So it's, the old head on young shoulders really doesn't exist until you go through them.
Yeah.
And there's a great question I have, and I learned to ask this years ago, is I know you don't know, but if you did know what the answer would be. And if someone tells you they don't know, once you ask them that question, they give you the answer. So you actually know your answer.
Yeah.
But the only way for you to start acting and feeling that way is through experience. How about you, Harry?
I think when I started the row in 2022, I was in the lowest point of my life completely. I was getting over it. I was being bullied at school. I had no self-confidence. I felt really, really depressed. I've never been lower. So I feel the row has already started to heal that for me. It's bringing back my self-confidence, making me believe, I can do something if I want to do it. And I just think after the row, I think it's just going to cement that in me.
Mm.
I think obviously starting the row for me was a kind of, I'm going to show these people what I can do. They've beat me down completely. And then when the opportunity came about, I know that it was in my mind. I was like, I do kind of, want to do something big to not just prove to myself, but prove to others that, I can do something. And I think after the row, I think it's just going to be a complete sense of, I've done this, right, what next am I going to do, So this is, I think for me personally, I hope for you guys as well, it's the first of a few big things, hopefully. But I just hope it brings back my confidence completely and my self-esteem.
And the sad thing, but the beautiful thing about what you said there is most of us can relate to that.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know anyone that's gone through their life and not been either slightly bullied or had to fight for their future or what their reputation. Some people have had a lot more difficult times than others. I can relate to that. I'm an only child, so I never had any brothers or sisters to protect me or stick up for me. Although probably a mild form of bullying, I think most of us will have to put up with that. Even the bullies must not be happy either.
Absolutely.
If you're bullying, you obviously have something missing.
Yeah.
Whether you excuse it because, maybe the bullies have had a difficult time at home.
Yeah.
Or you're having a difficult time because of them having a difficult time. Whatever way you reframe it, as long as you know that you're not on your own.
Absolutely, and that's what I found.
That kind of really helps the healing process. And what's admirable about what you're saying is, you're willing to say that.
I didn't accept that I was bullied for a long time. It's only been the last year where I've, really accepted that. Yeah, I was bullied and bullied very nastily.
Mm.
And talking about it with you and the family and friends is the best thing you can do. And then shaping your life around it is the best thing you can do. I'm not happy it happened, but I'm glad it did because it shapes the person that I am today and the morals that I have. And I don't know, when I stood on Anna's doorstep looking at her dad's boat, I don't know if I would have said, yeah, I think we could do that without that happening.
And that's that's ironically the crazy thing about it. A lot of my drivers is knowing that people have told me I can't, or that's ridiculous, or they've stood in my way.
Pushes you more to do
and
it.
And when I hear that, it's like a
absolutely
red rag. Like, right, I'm doing it now. Yeah. Can anybody else tell me that I'm not going to do it?
Yeah,
because then I'm going to do it.
Proving people wrong.
Yeah.
It's the nicest thing. It's almost like a drug. You get such satisfaction from proving someone wrong when someone says you can't do something. So my teacher at school actually said to me, and I'm so excited to go back to my school and do a talk, she said to me when I was in sick form, she went, "Cor, you're going to give up on this like you give up on everything else." She went, "You're not going to get the money." And I went, right, game on. A few months later, we got our first big sponsor and I was like,
You know the next stepping stone, if that's the right way to frame it. But the greatest thing you can do is, and I struggled with this, but the people that were bullies or say you couldn't do it, is to forgive them.
Yeah.
Or thank them.
And thank them for driving you in a
genuine way that. If you can go, I've healed a lot of wounds for myself by approaching those people and saying, thank you, or not in a sarcastic way, but in a, look, I am here where I am now, and I hope that we can bury our past. And bizarrely, it's turned out to some quite, wouldn't say close friendships, but it's healed me. And I think it's helped them as well to realize that their approach to me wasn't the right thing.
Yeah.
So I think if you can, you can go deep into the psychology of it, but unhealed emotional wounds will be with you forever. A great guy that's mentored me and a good friend of mine, Richard Moat, has taught me about unhealed emotional wounds and how they're buried. They're still there.
Absolutely.
But if you are able to, whether it's interact with those people again, or else just yourself, if they're out of your life and far away, just to be able to genuinely forgive or thank,
that's
a beautiful place to be.
I absolutely agree. I have no anger towards the people that bullied me when I was younger, but especially over the past 6 months. Where, you know, things have seemed to be going our way with the campaign and everything. I've been doing a lot of work myself, still am. And I think about back to those times, and who am I to judge those people, you know, who bullied me? They were young, just as much as me, being young. We all make mistakes in life. And where I am now, I'm very happy. Why should I hold anger towards you know, people that make mistakes? Everyone makes mistakes. And if I was to see those people that did those nasty things to me now, I'd have a lovely conversation with them. I'd tell them everything I'm doing and hope for the best for them. And I think there's something not particularly nice about holding anger towards people that, you know, probably know they did wrong. There's just no positive that can come out of that.
So that's probably, I had a question for you. What message do you want to give to people when you're through this journey and the end of the journey? But I don't think there could be a better message than that, really.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, you know, it's just a sense of stick with your dream. Just stick with it. No matter how big, no small. Just, if you've got a dream and you really want it, nothing can get in the way. I think people will be so amazed of what they can do with just persevering with your dream. I don't know if you guys want to.
One thing I always say is, and I say this, sometimes I say it in our talks, but Anna and Rowan know my little quote, is if you shoot for the stars and you don't make it, at least you've made it to the moon. So shoot for the stars. If you make it to the moon, you might have not achieved your goal, but you've still made it somewhere in the right direction and you've done a big achievement still. So regardless whether we make £20 million for charity or £20 for charity, we've still made something and we've still inspired people and we've still done something good and positive.
Are you bringing anything on board for comfort? You must have a limited space.
Be anything. We're thinking about bean bag.
Something
for the cabin,
on...
so that Harry's brought to Liverpool like a cuddle pillow. I hope that's not coming.
That was for the car journey up.
I bring a pillow in every car journey. Cars make me fall asleep. So I fall asleep on most journeys.
I sleep in cars, but I drove, so I wasn't allowed to sleep this time, which is horrible.
I think my comfort thing for me is going to be a photo of my family and a photo of my girlfriend, I think. Stick it on the wall of the cabin, and every time I come off shift, I'll look at those photos and I'll say, this is why I'm rowing, because I'm rowing to Antigua, because that's where my family and my girlfriend's going to be. That's going to be my motivation.
Do you have contact? Do you have like sat phones or are you able to call them?
So funny enough, we actually have Wi-Fi on board the boat, which is great.
Pretty standard now, eh?
So we got Starlink, so we can be on social media. Not that we're going to use it much.
It's not going to be like a FaceTime call.
No, it's not. But we have a sat phone. We can ring home whenever we want. But I think, we're going to have to prioritise rowing and everything and then put times in when we're going to contact about home, because we've got to focus on. We're going to have to be seriously focused when we're out there. The fun fact is the nearest people to us when we're out in the middle of the Atlantic is the astronauts in the International Space Station when they go over. We're pretty alone out there. We're very isolated. But I think that there's a real beauty in that as well. The simplicity of life, not having to worry about email or hearing the Teams invite on your laptop.
I feel
laptop.
Like going with you now already.
Honestly, we always joke about saying the road's going to be the easy part. Imagine not having to jump on a Zoom call.
Yeah.
That's going to be freeing, as it were, you know, not having to worry about any of that. I think that's...
My nightmare would be coming back to the emails.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So
you get across, you succeed. And obviously, apart from the initial having to see wanting to see your friends, family, and what's the first thing you're going to do when you get a bit of time?
I honestly think, for me, it's going to sit down, look at the view with a very cold glass of Coke. That's for me, just back into normality, just have a glass of Coke, and just probably think about what we've just done. I think that very small.
Anna?
I'm going to be at the swimming pool.
Straight back into the water.
Having a shower. I'm just going to be mucking about. You got a holiday. I just come off a bloody boat.
Oh, actually, that's right. You'll be in Antigua, won't you?
Yeah.
So I was thinking, do you have a swimming pool in your house?
No, I'm not. I'm not that good. No, I'll be in the beach front bar.
Wow.
I'll be proper relaxing, me.
Yeah. I haven't really thought about this, but it's a little bit grim. I'm probably going to go for a poo.
Oh.
On an actual toilet. Not
that's
a bucket.
That's a really good point.
Probably going to just sit there and think, wow, my bum cheeks are not getting pierced by a plastic bucket right now. And enjoy it.
That's, I think,
the first thing I'll do. Well,
so you'll be able to have two social media posts on what you're doing after, but...
I think
I might change mine.
At least that's
mine.
Honesty.
I think I might change mine, actually, because I got a real problem with...
It's not comfortable sitting on a bucket.
It's not nice at all. Horrible. It really isn't nice. And I get stage fright sometimes. So I think
but you must be on the back. If you're facing that way.
There's no privacy at all.
Harry didn't look the other way when I was having a wee the other day. He was going to take a video of it. I took a video of him the other day.
If you're rowing that way, you must be doing
your
toilet
steering sometimes if you're on hand steering.
If someone's in the cabin, then someone's facing that way, someone's in the cabin facing that way.
Suppose you
and
get
you're
to the
there
point you don't care,
bucket.
Do you?
You've got to move past it, because otherwise But Rowan's nearly there.
Rowan's
struggles,
there.
Bless him. He had to get up twice in the middle of the night. Oh, three times he got up in the middle of the night to try and go, and he couldn't do it, bless him.
Do you eat special food to sort of... balance.
I think the food makes it worse.
Balance the need.
Yeah, so it's
because you don't want too much fibre, really, do you? Or you'd be up and down all the time, or you'd...
Well, your stomachs get used to it. The food is dehydrated ration packs. So it's all the water's out of it. You boil water, pour water in it, rehydrates. You leave it for 10 minutes, and then it's edible. That's the best word. It's edible. It's not the greatest stuff in the world, but right now we're eating quite a lot of it because we're training our stomachs to get used to it. Because you don't want to be in the Canary Islands about to set off not having eaten any of it, because you're going to have the poos for the first few weeks if your stomach's not ready for it. But the special, you know, stuff with the food is that it's got so many calories in it. Harry and I need to eat around 6,000 calories a day, which is hard. When we get on the road, we're going to be burning roughly about 6,000 calories a day. So we need to eat 6,000 calories or more. So each ration pack has about 1,000 calories in it. So we have three main meals a day. So that's 3,000 calories. And the remaining 3,000 calories that we're going to supplement with snacks, very highly calorific snacks. But that's really hard.
Actually, when I met you, I thought one of the first things I thought is, are you not going to try and put on some weight now?
So I am. I unwillingly lost about 10 kilos over the past 6 months.
Training.
Just through training and everything. So right now, you know, we went out for breakfast this morning with Bernie. I had a lot of food. I need to put those 10 kilos back on. All of us are on a process of putting weight on right now.
I'm just trying to maintain what I am. I did the same thing as Ryan. I lost 10 kg, don't know how, but I had a medical for my Coast Guard the other day and then got on the scales and I used to weigh 90 kilos, got on and I was 80 and I thought, that's the same, right? So I got back on and it was 80 and I was like, oh, that's weird. Weighed myself at yours and it was the same. It was really weird. So I'm just trying to maintain it, because the more weight you put on, the more you have to eat on the road. So if you're heavier, you've got to... They expect you to eat more calories.
Why?
Because you've got more muscle mass to maintain.
So they've got to eat like 6,000. I've got to eat 3,300.
So Anna only weighs
55
kg.
Yeah.
So if you weighed 100 kg, you'd have to eat.
So if you have more fat mass, 6,000. I would assume that that's storage of.
Yeah, it is. But
energy,
it's also more your body.
I don't know why I'm folding my belly.
it's more your body requires to. Be fair.
It's because you're not meant to go on the row to lose weight, because if you're not eating enough and you lose weight, it could very quickly become dangerous.
If you lose it too fast.
Yeah, exactly. So you go with the intention of, right, we're going to take enough food that I'm not going to lose any weight. Obviously, number one, you're probably not going to eat all the food in the first place. Mm. And even if you do, if it's a really hot day, you've got bad weather, you're going to be burning more calories anyway.
Yeah.
So people lose weight. They estimate around 5 to 10 kilos per rower per crossing.
Bernie lost 2 stone.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Bernie was there for a third of a year.
Yeah.
Bernie loved
he
it.
He went for a holiday.
Yeah.
Bernie was running backwards on the oars. He was staying out there.
Yeah, I think from I was 70 kg. If I was to do the row at that point, I don't think that would have been safe.
Mm.
I was too thin. So right now my aim is 80, and I'm on track to get that weight, and having that buffer zone where I can lose weight and I'll still have the muscle mass there, I think that's you know, less about me and more about safety and being able to row. So that's the process that we're on right now.
Kind of want to be a bit fat as well. You don't want to be bony and skinny, because the cabins are amazing, but they're not comfortable by any means. They're not built for comfort. They're built for functionality. And I always say this because I'm the tallest one out of the three of us, and when I have my legs fully in, they touch, or my head touches the other side, it's a bit tight for me. And sitting down eating, the hardest thing is you can't ever sit. Like, I'm sitting on a chair right now, so I'm comfortable, I've got to support my lumbar and my back, and I could eat a meal now and it digests fine. But when you're sat, you're slouched right down, or you're on your side eating, it doesn't have a straight path down your digestive system, so it's really, really hard to digest food. And it takes me quite a while to eat the food. And I never end up finishing it because I don't have time. We've got to get back on the oars. So that's the hardest bit for me.
You guys started the idea and became two of the three flying fish.
Yeah.
And then Harry joined you later. So how did you then get involved?
So I remember it vividly. One night I got a phone call from Rowan, and he said, oh, our teammate Matt, he's just dropped out of the team. Rowan was actually crying down the phone to me, and obviously me and Rowan had been friends for a few years before that through the Air Cadets. Anyway, I knew Anna. We wasn't the closest friends before, but we was pretty good mates.
Yeah,
I'd say
when we went to events together.
Yeah, yeah. But me and Rowan were literally best mates, almost like brothers. Not anymore though, not joking. and yeah, so he called me and I said, right, I was with my ex-girlfriend at the time. We was on like a date or something. And I basically said to her, I said, right, that's done now, right? You go home. So I literally ended the date with her, went to meet Rowan, and we just sat in my car. I think we went to
McDonald's.
Yeah.
You know, the birthplace of all Ocean Rose and McDonald's car park.
Yeah. So we sat in there, just literally in my car, went through the drive-thru, got a drink, and we just sat there for hours talking. I think I got home at like 3 or 4 in the morning. We was just talking for ages. And he basically said, do you want to join the team? And at this point, I instantly said yes. Didn't think about any
I didn't know
questions.
Anything about this, by the way.
I hadn't consulted Anna at all.
Didn't get told.
I just said yes. And I said, right, yeah, 100%, I'll do it. Yep, definitely. Didn't speak to anyone about it. Didn't think about it. Didn't know. I knew everything about the row because even before Anna and Rowan, I think I knew about the row because I've been watching it since I was really, really young.
I'm going to butt in here. Harry actually tried to start a competitive ocean rowing team to go against our original team. Mm. That fell through, didn't it?
I didn't really try. It was more just like me and my mates at school were like, oh yeah, see them flying fish over there, I reckon we'd smoke them. But a few of my mates at school, we said we'd do it. Just all as a joke, really. But it didn't really go anywhere. So anyway, yeah, they asked me.
How all
yes.
great partnerships come together.
Yeah, exactly.
The week will go and the ones that really want to do it will stick it out.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, they asked me to join. I said yes instantly. Didn't think about it. Very naive at the time, but I'm glad I did. Best decision I ever made.
Absolutely, and we're glad to have you on board. Yes, you know, you brought an energy that we didn't have because of the setback of our old teammate leaving. Your energy coming in, and you know, the same energy we had when we started, just brought us back up to a level.
Definitely, and it was, to be fair, for me at the time, it was quite difficult because I'd say a month or two after, or a couple months after I joined the team, Anna and Ryan's morale was literally at rock bottom from what happened. Picked up a little bit when I joined, but then all of our morale was pretty low because we had zero money. We had nothing to show for what they'd built over the last year and a half, 2 years. So that sort of lowered all of our morale. And at that time, I was doing my A-levels. Obviously, Anna's just done hers a few months ago. But that was still a very stressful time for me and obviously for the team. To balance that, I was working at the time as well. So it's just me and Anna have both gone through very similar situations with doing A-levels and balancing the row.
Yeah.
So you're saying, do you remember we were coming up in the lift and you said, how are you going to get into property if you've got no money?
Yes.
And I said to you, I'll show you how to get into property without having any money. Well, you can, this is the exact same story. Mm. You're going to row the Atlantic.
We had to
start off with no money.
You make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely, right.
And if anyone, like that's another great message. If anyone thinks that money is the obstacle for their success, I understand how they think it is, but it's not. Mm. You just have to find people that'll believe in you.
Yeah.
That are willing to back you with time and money. Because it's not just, no success is ever one dimensional. So many factors to your success. And money is one of them. But it's probably one of the easier things to come about if you've got something that can inspire people or something that can make a difference or something that can, whether you're going to give back through, emotionally give back or financially give back at the end of it, anyone with money or anyone with experience or anyone with success, if they're going to support the next generation or the younger, any generation really, if they're going to support somebody with a dream, all they want to know is what that return on investment is.
Yeah.
So for you, your return on investment, you know, for me, my investment in you with time or money, or Bernie's investment in you with time or money, is we just want to know that you're going to deliver and you're going to make a difference. There's going to be a great message out there that you're going to help. And so it's a combination, really. But definitely money is probably money's one of the easiest obstacles to overcome, providing you've got all the other, or most of the other bits of the puzzle put together.
Yep, see, right.
Is there anything anyone listening to this podcast you think should know, or any lessons that they could get from you guys
that we haven't discussed? I think we've touched on our main key points, really, with, you know, sticking with your dream.
Yeah.
Nothing's impossible, no matter how big or small. I think that, you know, obviously we want to make money for Teenage Cancer Trust, but our primary goal, the one that we work our hardest for, is just inspiring at least one person. You know, even if it's, I say,
well, you've inspired me now. There you go, we're done now.
There we are, we're done. Don't even have to do the row now. You can't do your dream without help. I think realising that asking other people for help is one of the strongest, you know, qualities of anyone. When with this row, we have a whole village of people helping us. We've got Bernie, we've got yourself, we've got all of our partners, our people that are working with our training, our mental coaches. There's literally a whole village of people that have helped us to get where we are. All we've done is just brought that village together. And it's okay to accept that you can't do something by yourself. If you think someone might help you, go and ask. And that's all I did with Bernie. I said, I noticed Bernie might have an ability to help us in some shape or form. I didn't know how big. I certainly didn't think he'd help us to the amount he has helped us. But I just went and asked. Mm. And I think that is a quality that everyone should have, accepting that you need help is a huge, huge quality.
Yeah, and you just got to find that first person to take that step. You know, we had Bernie on board and everything went from there. And then our first proper partner, we went from no money, and then Gillian Ashcroft came on board. And that was like from 0 to 100 straight away. And as soon as we had that one person that believed in us enough to put their money where their mouth is, basically, we had that. Then we go, actually, you know, before then we were three kids with no money, nothing to show for it, and just saying we wanted to do it. Then we went from that to we've got a boat. You know, so immediately, it was that switch of, yeah, we're three kids, we want to row the Atlantic, whatever, and we've got a boat to show we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And then that was when you got everyone else going, oh, actually, I'll chip in, here's this, here's that. And it was like that one person, them two people that believed in you enough to help you out was that stepping stone. And then it just all went, you know, just started piling up.
Yeah.
And now we've got to this point, you know, and so in what, a year, we've gone from absolutely nothing to now basically completed the funds and really focusing on raising the money for Teenage Cancer Trust and inspiring people. So it's just having that, you know, belief to keep going until that one person is there. You know, they might be years away, but you never know.
Well, I'm delighted to be part of the journey. You guys are an inspiration. Been a pleasure getting to know you, and we're going to go for dinner tonight.
Looking forward to it.
High five. Well done, guys.
Thank you very much for having us.